Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney to Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. And I tell you, we have a tremendous guest on the line. She will be the first to come on. And I just want to tell everybody that, you know, we're doing some tremendous work. Last week I was in Chicago speaking there and had a tremendous time. Before that, I was in New York spreading the word, you know, letting people know what we can do and how we can do this day. And before that, I was up in Marquette, Michigan, of all the places in the world, because I was in prison up there. And one of the churches up there who really supported me invited me back up there. It was a tremendous outing. People came from all over, and they just want to hear what Reverend Edward Pinckney had to say. I'm excited today. I'm excited today. I've been traveling all over country, trying to educate the people, you know, because right now we're unconscious, you know, and I'm trying to make you conscious of really what's going on. But also, I want to talk about the United States and this mass incarceration that we have right now before I bring on my first guest. The United States have an enormous prison problem, more than 2.4 million prisoners, to be precise, locked up in the federal penitentiary, state correctional facility, and local jail that form the nation's prison industrial complex. So since 1980, the number of incarceration centers in the United States have more than quadrupled, an unprecedented rise actually attributed to four decades of tough-on-crime. And also, the war drug, poverty, and different things of that nature. Today, we have one out of every 100 Americans that are behind bars. And the United States has the largest prison population in the world, both in terms of the actual number of inmates as a percentage of total population. The numbers are staggering. The United States incarceration rate is nearly 3.5 higher than that of Mexico, a country that has spent the last decade actually having a drug war, a real drug war, between 5 and 10 times higher than those seen in Western Europe. There are more people locked up in the United States than in China. In fact, the United States is home to nearly a quarter of the world prisoners, despite accounts for just 5% of all of the overall global population. But the data gets even more disturbing when broken down at the state level. A recent analysis by the Prison Policy Initiative shows that Louisiana has undoubtedly led American march towards mass incarceration. No state or region has been immune to the prison boom, and each state is a global, I don't even want to talk about it. While with incarceration rate that compares to those found in isolated dictatorship, the country recovering from the Civil War. Now listen to this. The state of Louisiana has 1,341 prisoners per 100,000. The rest of the world has 155. Mississippi has 1,155. The rest of the world has 155. Oklahoma, which is almost ridiculous, has 1,081. Georgia, 1,074. Texas, 1,063, and the rest of the world has 155. There's something wrong with that picture. It's because we do not stand together. We do not stand up for what is right. We're too busy. The only time we take a stand when it affects us directly. And that's a bad thing. That's a bad thing. But I don't want to talk too much about this. I'm going to bring on my good friend, Ms. Sanders from, I think that's Yeah. Tom, are you there?
I'm here. Jerry. How are you, Reverend Pickney?
Oh, I'm great. How about yourself?
I am doing great and very excited to be with you today.
Oh, no, I'm excited to be with you because I know the wonderful work that you have been doing, and I'm excited about that. A lot of times people don't quite understand the work that's being done and until you have been deceased or something like that. Then they say, wow, you know, that was amazing. That was tremendous, you know. Nobody else have done that, you know. Like even with Martin Luther King, before he, you know, before he died, people hated him. He was one of the most hated men in the country by black folks too. I don't, you know, they don't talk about that. I read that book, The Death of a King, by Travis Smiley, and that book brought tears to my eyes because I could not believe it. But listen, we don't want to talk about that. I want to know what you want to talk about. You tell us what you want us to know because I tell you, I'm excited about you.
Well, thank you so much, Reverend Pickney, again. Well, I'd love to tell to talk about a couple of things, but I'll begin with policing. We have had a real problem since this country's inception with our policing issues, particularly if they pertain to people of color. And again, after having been in the Ferguson area, having watched the Michael Brown, the encounters associated with the Michael Brown killing unfold, having been in DOJ meetings, it became very clear to me that if we want to address our policing problem, then we have to take it upon ourselves, the onus upon ourselves, to make sure that we come up with a solution. And so we embarked upon a process of extensive study. We literally talk with people all over the country. We talk with law enforcement agents. I talk with constitutional professors at esteemed universities who have written countless books on policing, professors who had held forums on symposiums on policing. And I was actually told that it can't be solved. It can't be resolved. Well, I'm pleased to say that one of those authorities now says that Yurlia is the answer. Now, Yurlia, as we affectionately call it, is called the Uniform, it's known as the Uniform Reporting Law Enforcement Improvement Act, and it is currently a legislative proposal, again, drafted by individuals, the parents, who have the greatest interest in seeing a true revamping of policing. Now, I want to emphasize, this is not police reform. This is tearing the system down and rebuilding it from the ground up. Reverend Pickney, one of my areas of expertise in the corporate sector has been taking on very tough problems that organizations found difficulty figuring out how to solve. And so policing, as we went about garnering our research, it is embedded in a culture that is literally impossible to reform. So we have to tear it down and rebuild it so that it functions as it should in order to fulfill its mission to protect and serve. So having done that, this legislative proposal presents some really interesting changes that will, again, revamp policing. First of all is a pattern or practice data bank. Many people are familiar with thin agreements. They're familiar with the DOJ descending on a community to say, to study use of force after there's been a killing such as Tamir Rice or Michael Brown. They comb through all of the files at a policing entity. They look at all the reports. They talk to the community. They're gathering data because data is important. Data tells a story. So they're gathering this data, but it's retrospective. It's after these events have occurred, and so it's incomplete. But nonetheless, they're gathering it to so that they can paint a picture of how policing has been carried out in a particular community. Now, many times these files are incomplete, such as the use of force files in Ferguson. And I often think and wonder how many people have been killed in Ferguson that no one knows anything about. So with this pattern or practice data bank that your LEA introduces, what it requires law enforcement agents to do, and when I say law enforcement agents, I'm talking about private duty security officers, I'm talking about police officers, I'm talking about prison guards, I'm talking about anyone in a juvenile facility, anyone in this nation, local, state, or federal, who has a law enforcement responsibility will be required to document each and every action and encounter in this POP data bank. They will be required to enter the race, the gender, the specific interactions. All of that information has to be entered into this data bank. And so what you have is you have on an ongoing basis the accumulation pattern of practice data rather than having to go and retroactively do that when there is a use of force event that commands national attention. So this would be occurring in every entity throughout the United States. And an officer, security guard, no one in law enforcement, if you work in a law enforcement capacity without being in the POP data bank, you are committing fraud. And this legislation actually contains penalties for violation of any of the codes that are within this legislative proposal. So you're capturing this information. You're capturing this information on an ongoing basis. And you're also, let me tell you, in addition to this POP data, the data on the interactions, you're also capturing data such as the economic consequences of particular actions. When you bring in an individual, that individual is photographed because we want to know if you're brutalizing or how that person looked coming into the precinct as well as when that person is leaving. It captures all of the information that we want to know in addition to allowing the public to log into that data bank from their home computer and enter information about their encounter with a law enforcement agent. Now, one really important thing about this data bank is the fact that it has an unfit indicator. So officers like a Darren Wilson, who's identified as being unfit, once that officer, whether he resigns early in order to avoid, say, certain penalties, let's say an officer is engaged in an action and so he decides he's going to resign to avoid a penalty. Well, that won't work anymore. If you are accused of an action and you resign, or if you are found to have engaged in inappropriate activities by either a trainer or to be unfit mentally or whatever, by a trainer, by a supervisor, by a licensing agency, then guess what? Fit indicator is set, and you cannot work in a law enforcement entity anywhere else in the United States. We can track you. No matter where you go, you will be trackable in this data bank. As an officer, if you move, for example, let's say the unfit indicator is not activated, but if you move from one entity to the next, your record follows you. And so we can track you wherever you go in the United States and see the totality of your actions as a law enforcement agent. Now, this legislation is extremely comprehensive, and so it's going to be very important that those who are listening to me who have an interest in learning more about this legislation go to our website to learn more. Now, before you do that, however, I want to tell you a few other things about your LEA. Your LEA does something very different. It has it introduces a national use of force statute. Now, for those of you who do not know, this legislative proposal will supersede everything that is introduced by the state. You know, the state continues to introduce these laws that you know, make that aid, literally aid law enforcement agents and help them escape responsibility for their actions when they use force. Your LEA will do away with that. It will essentially neutralize the impact that the Fraternal Order of Police right now, that that organization is able to have on local policing, local and state policing organizations. The Officer's Bill of Rights, that goes away because this is federal legislation, it supersedes that. The use of force statute, which is a national statute, one statute, introduces a whole new concept to policing. It's called an obligation to preserve life and prevent injury. In other words, we're looking for what we call in this proposal smart policing. You do not get to shoot a fleeing felon. The Supreme Court said that. This legislative proposal really recognizes that and writes it into law. You do not get to abuse and beat people without demonstrating that you had no other choice. So it sort of flips the coin. Rather than saying, oh, I shot, you know, Tamir Rice because I was afraid for my life, what you have to argue now is that you took all of the steps and the precautions you were taught during training, which, again, is specifically laid out in this proposal, that you engage in all of those actions to avoid using force or to avoid injury. So it's not just use of force. It introduces a requirement to respect life in the policing process. And, again, there's many, many, many provisions in this legislative proposal that are designed to give the public an opportunity to be a player in the development of public policy. If an officer, for example, if an officer does use force, today that officer is not tested immediately after for drugs or alcohol, that is now would be immediate. And the officers would have no involvement in the investigative process. Let me give you an example. In the Michael Brown shooting, following the shooting, Darren Wilson and his colleagues, they interviewed people at the complex where the shooting occurred. They collected evidence. They removed Michael Brown's remains, that the coroner did, and so they had all of his DNA and all of the access to any and everything they needed to tell their story. They had access to, again, all of the witness testimony. So what happened is you get this silence. You have an officer who's not talking. You have all of his colleagues who are gathering this information. Even the autopsy is conducted by people who work with law enforcement agents every single day. And I was very, I was very perplexed by the fact that all of these people in the Michael Brown killing who had videos, who witnessed the events, had one set of events. Autopsy came out and literally refuted what everybody had seen. And so yeah. I contacted one of the foremost medical examiners in the state of Michigan, and I posed the question, can you make an entry wound look like an exit wound and an exit wound look like an entry wound? And what are the benefits of conducting the first autopsy? He said, absolutely. The person who conducts the first autopsy basically gets to tell the story. And an autopsy is just like any other medical examination. Its results are basically dependent upon what the physician observes or says he or she observes. So we today wonder why we cannot get convictions, yet the very people who execute community members, and by the way, there are a lot of whites being executed as well, but the people who execute Americans, they collect the evidence, again, they secure the remains and remove them from the scene. They investigate and talk with everyone on the at the site. So now they know what story everyone else is going to tell. They have all of the information they need to craft a story that undermines what everyone else saw or captured. That will no longer be the case with your LEA. Your LEA requires an independent investigative team to investigate use of force events, to present that information in front of a newly seated grand jury in full public view. And if the indictment comes down, then an attorney selected by the family who is acting as an agent, as a private prosecutor, which, by the way, was very prevalent many years ago in the United States, but that attorney selected by the family is now will now represent and prosecute that police officer rather than the prosecutor who relies upon police officers every day to get convictions. So it completely turns upside down the paradigm that currently defines policing in the United States. It also requires training, psychological testing, but in addition to that, it gives rise to an Office of Citizen Oversight, okay? So now a lot of communities have citizen oversight boards, and those oversight boards eventually become infiltrated with individuals who are really not that sensitive to the community issues. So a lot of civilian oversight boards over time become ineffective. The Office of Accountability and Civilian Oversight, which this legislative proposal creates, gives rise to, it uses a different model. It allows, it's a conference-type setting where citizens from across the country come to these regional and the national council and has an impact and can voice issues and present review data on policing. Now, more important than anything, this legislative proposal produces incredible data. It's not just pure happenstance that we have no fine data on policing, the number of killings, people who are killed in this nation, America. Data doesn't really exist, okay? So that is by design, because anyone who was involved in affirmative action, anyone knows the census. Everything America does is based upon information and data. So why wouldn't we have information telling us who, when, where has been killed by police officers? Now, we do know how many police officers are killed. We know their names. We know their ages. We know all of that. But that data has not been maintained on the citizens of this nation. What your LEA does is it provides detailed data, not only on law enforcement agents, on their records, so that you can see those that are hostile. You know, you could have one law enforcement agent, if it seems that the only people he stops are African-Americans, and if it seems like African-Americans are constantly making logs in this databank saying that he put a gun to their head, then guess what? The reports will flag that officer. And that officer then can be reviewed and even prosecuted by an attorney as a representative of DOJ. So DOJ will literally blanket deputize all attorneys to act on its behalf. So we don't need to wait for DOJ to come down, because if you look at the number of pattern of practice investigations that have been done over the last 5 or 6 years, they're infinitesimal. They're negligible. But guess what? These events are happening all over the country. So what we do with this legislative proposal is we take DOJ's force and its ability to investigate these matters, and we create it, we multiply it exponentially by attorneys who are willing to take these cases on in their local communities based upon the data in this data bank. But again, I could go on and on and on the many provisions in this data bank. It is essential that we get this legislative proposal passed. Now, let me talk about how we get that done. First of all,
Mr. Sandy, you got can you do it in about 3 minutes?
Absolutely. We have estimated that we need about 9 million people endorsing this legislation. And we want people to understand this legislation, because we do not want important provisions removed, because congressional leaders during our lobbying on the Hill have already advised us that the Fraternal Order of Police and police unions are going to be very hostile to this legislative proposal. So we need people to learn it. We need you to share it. We need you to go to our website, which is www.changeisonus.org. Look at our tools. We have banners that you can print at your local printer for $25 to promote it. Tell people about it. Donate. We need you to be an active participant in this process.
Very, very good. Listen, that is tremendous. I read it, and I'm excited. I'm very excited about it. One of the things that I like most of all, that we can flag these guys that are out here killing, and they go to another police department and get a job, and get a better job than they had before. And I think what you – and also you're the author of that. Is that correct?
Yes, I am, you know, with a lot of research around the country. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And that is really, really, really exciting. You got about 2 minutes. I want you to sum it up. And I got to move on to a Mr. Victor. One of his representatives, he's in prison in Louisiana, and his case is really remarkable. If you can just, after you give your 2 minutes, hang on the line and listen to what he has to say for him, because you might be able to help him. And, you know, it sounds like to me that you're heading in the right direction, and I love it. And I like I said, I read what you wrote, what you sent me, and it was beautiful. And go ahead. Let me give you the 2 minutes to go so I can bring on Mr. Victor.
Okay, I want to emphasize again that everyone should go to www.changeisonus.org and look at the legislative proposal for yourself. The bottom line is protest without policy is just circular motion. We need an end goal. It's like playing football, you know. You don't just throw the ball. You know what you want in the end. And so we have to have something that all of this protest and anger is directed at achieving. And so that has to be your LEA. We have shopped around the country. We've looked for other alternatives, because this is not about us. This is about saving lives. And we've seen nothing that anyone could bring or deliver to us that would address the issues that we identified. Also, I'll conclude with this. Amnesty International published a report on policing extrajudicial killings by law enforcement in the United States. Your LEA meets every requirement that Amnesty International set out as a requirement in its report. And so we need you on board actively. We need you to donate. The donations have been almost non-existent. If this is really important to you, if you're out in the street, if you're yelling and screaming at police officers, guess what? We need you to work for a solution rather than against a problem.
All right. Well, thank you, thank you, thank you. I enjoyed every single minute of it. I understand exactly what you're doing here, and I really believe that if we can work on that, get that initiated, it could prevent a lot of this killing, not only in St. Louis, Missouri, but around the country. So I'm excited. I'm excited that program and talked about it. But listen, I got to move on. I got to talk, bring in Mr. Victor. So just hang with me. Give me a few minutes so you can listen to what this young man got to say. All right. Mr. Victor, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Great. All right. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Everything's wonderful. I am not Mr. Victor. My name is Elder Darren Boykins. I'm a representative of him.
Okay. Well, you know the story. Why don't you tell it to us so people can hear and see how they can reach out and help you or help Mr. Victor?
Yeah, it's an amazing story. My name is Elder Darren Boykins. I'm a minister here in New Orleans, Louisiana. And so I'm very, very active in the political plight of many people here in New Orleans. And I happened to read the story of Errol Victor. And I said that what this gentleman is going through, nothing like this could really be happening. So I had to reach out and go meet this guy for myself. It's a very, very unique story, but I'm going to summarize it and give you a little background. The major problem that he had was being a successful African-American businessman. And as being a businessman, he was getting ready to build a supermarket. He was getting ready to build a shopping center, a weight facility, all types of businesses he was developing. And he was a threat to the white people in St. John Parish because they didn't want a black man to be successful because their whole role was to marginalize him. So as he was developing business, they were looking for a way in to destroy his life. And as soon as they found a way in, this is what happened. Here's the story. He had a son who had asthma, a young kid, very young kid who had asthma. And his son got a whooping from the mother. The mother whooped the son. 2 days later, the son had an asthma attack. It was an acute asthma. And with the asthma attack, it literally shut off his ability to breathe, and they rushed him to the hospital. And while he was in the hospital, he died. Mr. Errol Victor, not knowing that his son was dead, told the doctors, listen, I take full responsibility for everything. He was saying, I take full responsibility for paying the bill.
Yeah.
So they said, oh, you're the one who killed the kid. He said, kill the kid? What do you mean? And at that moment, they arrest him. And this gentleman, Mr. Errol Victor, who had never been in trouble a day in his life, who had never been late paying a bill, who had a credit score of 850, because they always wanted a way in to destroy his life, they used that as the way in. They arrested him. They went to his house, arrested his wife. They took his kids. Even before he was sentenced, before he went to court, the day after he was arrested, now note what I said, he had never been late paying a bill. The day after he was arrested, the banks foreclosed on his house, foreclosed on every business loan, seized all of his assets. He had a friend who was a lawyer. He had over $250,000 in the bank. The lawyer went and saw him three times, and charged him $250,000 for those sites. It seems that everything went wrong. Everything went wrong. He had an attorney named Martin Regan who did an excellent job. He talked to the coroner. He says, Mr. Coroner, how could you change this man's death certificate without doing any research? The coroner said, I felt like it. He proved beyond any reason. He says, listen, he said he got the coroner on the stand in St. John Parish. And he says, listen, can you explain to me what scientific evidence you used to change this death certificate from unknown reason why the kid died to that the kid was strangled? He said, I have none. He said, did you do any new investigations? He says, no. I just felt like I wanted to change the report. And he says, listen, since you're a coroner and you've been a coroner for over 20 years, you've seen people who have been strangled, people whose neck has been broken. He went through, can you explain to me, has this kid's neck been broken? Was anything wrong? He says, no. But they used that in, and they literally destroyed this man's life. They took his kids before he was sentenced. They put his kids up for adoption. His kids was given away, and he had never been to court. Listen, this is crazy. This man was sent to Angola, the worst penitentiary in the world. He was sent to Angola before he was put on trial. You know, no one goes to Angola unless you're doing anywhere from 75 years to life. He was sent to Angola before he went to court. It was just a kangaroo court. Thing was always against him. You know, and the primary purpose was that you had a black man who was a successful businessman in a majority white town, and they wanted to destroy him. And if you look at this case of Mr. Errol Victor, you will see this is crazy. You have never seen anything. I have his son, Emmanuel, sitting right here. Emmanuel Victor, you want to say something?
How you doing?
How you doing?
Can you hear him?
Yeah, but you need to talk up just a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. My name is Emmanuel Victor. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I just want to talk about we need to reach out for some support, because what they're doing to us is unfair, and we're tired of just talking about it, and we need some action and we need some help.
And it's so important. If I didn't know we'd be talking about it. There are federal cases in the court, Errol Victor, in the federal cases where you can see that you would have all the data that's available proving that the day after he was arrested, the banks seized his house. Now, he was arrested on the 2nd, I think June the 2nd. On June the 3rd, how do you foreclose on a man's loan? You seize his assets, take his whole bank account. They seize all of his businesses. They seize everything the day after he was arrested, not the day after he was convicted. The next day, even though he had already paid his mortgage for that month, they foreclosed on his house, and he had never been late. They took millions of dollars of this man's assets. And right now, they gave him, listen, I'm talking about, I know that it's wrong that it's a little kid who lost his life, but they did not kill the kid. The kid died from asthma. He had one of the most acute asthma diseases from his youth, and it expanded and cut off his breathing. Now, based on that, he does not need to be, he has been given a sentence in Angola for life, and his wife has a prison sentence for life. You know what I'm saying? This
is crazy. You're saying both of them got life?
Yes, both of them are in Angola, Louisiana right now today. They were sentenced.
Are you
in
saying
a
that they both got life without parole? No,
yes,
no
this
parole?
Is very, very important. Listen to this. Yes, one more important thing. Before he went to court, he had filed a motion to recuse all the judges in St. John Parish Court. He filed a motion to recuse every judge. It was legally filed. They said, we're not going to honor your motion. And they went on and had court. Even without him being there, they had court, and they sentenced him to life in prison. He's doing life. This man has, you will not find a man who has a better character than this man. Surely he has better character than our president. You know, this man is an honorable man. But listen, he's pushing an agenda now called Amendment 28. and he's looking for equal rights, protective rights for inmates, because inmates need to be protected, because too many are being prosecuted over and over for the same thing, the multi-bail system. That's some unconstitutional, unethical issues. We have people who have possession of marijuana two times and get another possession, and they're doing life. This is crazy. Amendment 28, you can look at it. It's called Amendment 28site.wordpress.com. Again, Amendment, D-M-E-N-T, 28, site, S-I-T-E, .wordpress, W-O-R-D-P-R-E-S-S.com. And what he's trying to do is get people to sign a petition. We have to stop this. Just a week ago, the sheriff in Caddo Parish, C-A-D-D-O, made a statement. We can't let all the, they're trying to do prison reform here in Louisiana. He gets other sheriffs behind him, and he makes a statement. We can't have good prisoners being released. We need these men to be in jail because they wash our cars. They change, they fix our cars. They clean the streets. They pick up trash. And if we let all the good inmates out, who going to do it? This is the mentality
amazing.
They have. And, this is all you got to do is Google Caddo, C-A-D-D-O, sheriff statements. I'm not making this up. Listen, this is worse than a nightmare. How do you have a man who, before he's convicted, before he go to prison, go to Angola, Louisiana? How do you have a man who, before he get convicted, before he go to trial, his kids are put up for adoption and given away permanently, that he can't get his kids back? Before he's convicted, not after. Before he goes to trial. How do you do this? Man, this is one of the most unconstitutional, most wicked, most devious, demonic things that I've ever seen. If you look up Errol Victor's case, do the research. Don't let, because they have convoluted to make it look like he did something. All this old fancy cover up. But this man is innocent. He needs to be released from jail. And it's just crazy.
I understand. Hey, do you know Belinda Brown?
Yes.
Do you know Belinda Brown from Slidell, Louisiana?
Yes, we do.
Hello? You do
know her? Yes, we do. Can you hear me? Yes.
I can hear you well. Couldn't hear you at first, but now I can hear you. Yes, yes.
Uh-huh.
Have you talked to her about this? Because I know I had talked to Mr. Victor before on my show before I went to prison myself.
Okay.
So
yes, we have
talked
to her. She's helping
Victor.
Out.
Yes, she is. I know
okay.
She would. If
yes.
We've had
the NAACP, the Urban League, we've had so many people that have come to help, but the forces of power are so great, and they so wanted to destroy this man's vision, because see, it's almost like Black Wall Street. You know, once you get black men who are in business, who are in power, who are not subject to them economically, then they lose the control. And they could not have someone in St. John Parish opening up business that's a black man, because they don't want, they felt that people would not do business with them. So they opened up and they literally destroyed this man. But he's a strong man. He has a music right now. He has a song called Favor. He's also a minister. He has a song called Favor. We would like for you to download it, listen to it. It's a very powerful. It could be, again, obtained at Amendment 28.
Hey, can you send me the link to that? Send me a link to it, would you please?
Okay, I'll send you a link. But also, you can just go to Google Play, Spotify, or iTunes and put in Errol Victor, E-R-R-O-L, Victor. And he has a song called Favor, S-A-V-O-R, and another one called God's Love. But But listen, you talking about consent. See, this is more now. We're talking about the human aspect of pain that's been inflicted on his life. But the real attack was a demonic attack, because this man had a great love for God. He's been helping people. He was sending people to college. He was helping. I mean, if someone had a need in St. John Parish, he helped them out. And that surely made the devil angry. Again, Google Play, Spotify, iTunes, just type in Errol Victor, ErrolVictor, and he got a song called Favor and God's Love, but we will also send you a link. But more importantly, check out amendment28site.wordpress.com. There's a link to sign a petition. Thousands of inmates have already signed this petition. Even regular citizens who have signed this petition. We need legislation to be passed to help these inmates, because anybody could be entrapped. Listen, the word they use, the code word, is felon. We found so many people who have been sent to prison, who have been sent to jail, who has been innocent. But the stigma is still over them. They can't find a job. They make it difficult for you to do business, to be able to work. But we need your support. Do the background on this Errol Victor thing. Get the word out on it. You have never seen a man been more railroaded than this guy. Explain to me, how do you foreclose on a man's house when he's not late?
I'm going to give you 2 minutes to tell everybody what you need to know, and then I got to bring on my next guest. Go right ahead.
In 2 minutes, what we want to do is summarize. Mr. Errol Victor is an innocent man who sits in Angola. They gave him life in prison, and he's doing life because he did not even whoop his kid. The mother whooped the kid. The kid had webs on him, true. But the kid died 2 days later from an asthma attack, and they just tied him in. And from that, on that June's second arrest, on June the 3rd, they seized his house, they seized his bank account, they took millions of dollars out of this man's bank account. They took all his money, all his business equipment, everything, the day after he was arrested. He was put in Angola Penitentiary during time before he was found guilty. He filed a motion to recuse all the judges in St. John Parish. It was stamped properly. They accepted the motion by the court. They put a second stamp on that, and they still went to have a trial without having to recuse the motion. This man needs support. He needs help. We appreciate your love. Go to the site, amendment28.wordpress.com. We need your support. Make sure you buy that those songs, Favor, God's Love, by Google's Play, Spotify, iTunes, Errol Victor. Thank you.
All right. That is one situation where we all need to look into and see what we can do to help this young man. You know, the system itself, there is no justice here, country, especially
and
for
last
blacks.
Thing, if you want to call, you can call me at 504-957-5906. 504-957-5906. Sorry about interrupting you.
All right. That's beautiful. So those who are out there who want to call them, you can reach them at 504-957-5906. And you got to remember this, that New Orleans, Louisiana, Slidell, Baton Rouge, they have more people in prison than all the other countries. When I say all the other countries, I mean countries to be. The United States has more, but Louisiana have 1,341 people per 100,000 people in prison. Amazing. 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 We have to go out and do something. We have to say enough is enough. We have to take this thing to a whole different level. We have to change the formula. You know, and I know a lot of people don't understand certain things that's happening because here in the Berrien County, Michigan, which is Benton Harbor's in there, just recently, the sheriff's department attacked, sexually harassed, molested over 50 women, and not one of them was arrested. Not one. Which is unfortunate, but it's because the people, anytime the people are silent and refuse to stand up, unless it's your family member, then we're going to lose. If you in trouble, I'm in trouble. That's the way and the language that we need to do, we need to use, especially here in this country, the land of the free and the home of the brave. I don't know what country they're talking about. If you know, please let me know, because it's definitely not here in the United States of America. And you guys who go down there and want to salute the flag, that flag is dripping with blood. It's bloody. 5 million Native Americans slaughtered under the flag. The Vietnam War, the Korean War, that wasn't for freedom. They go around trying to tell people it's for freedom. It's not for freedom. They were trying to bully these little countries, and these little countries spanked their butt. Afghanistan, they were supplying arms to the Afghanistanians to fight the Russians. And they was using their weapons. They were training them to fight the Russians. The Russians pulled out, and then they went in to fight. It was mostly over the drug trade. We have to learn to stand together. There is no justice in this country. Until we learn that, it's going to continue like this. I just don't believe if we don't stand up and fight back, that we'll ever win. And it don't have to be your family. See, one thing about black people, only time they're going to come out of the woodwork most of the time, not all the time, when it affects their family and their family members. We have to change that. We have to get out there and fight back. Who would believe that this country has over 30 different states with more people in prison than Cuba, the second largest prison system in the world? We have more people in prison than China, who has 1.5 billion people. What's next? What next? I want to go to switch it up just a little bit. I want to bring in my good friend Roz, and she has a story to tell. We don't have a lot of time, but let's see what she got to say. Roz, are you there?
Yes, I am, Reverend Pinkney, and all these stories are just heart-wrenching, awful, and I thank the lady who's trying to make a change. We'll pray for her and for the other man to get out of prison, and the right people come to help them. I was an injured worker. There's millions of injured workers across America. It's delays, denials, and death of injured workers in the states that you live. They don't want to pay you. They have whore doctors that write bogus medical reports. Killing off injured workers is okay with them, as Governor Brown and the state legislature here in California comes up with all these bills that it's okay to kill them. I was sprayed in my face with toxic chemicals from a fire extinguisher. They refused to call the paramedics, which are free here. They just put me in a dark room. There was no nurse, leaving me for hours and then telling me I had to drive home. and they delayed my case for 10 years, even though saying I had all these physical injuries. And then they came up with a judge, Judge Gerald Cohn, who made a medical diagnosis, who's not a doctor, who gave it to the doctor, Dr. John Stahlberg, and he wrote a medical report, which lowered my medical rating. That means they did not medically treat me. They took the doctors away from me. They took all the money that I was to receive. That's hundreds of thousands of dollars. Millions of dollars in care that I should have been receiving. I really lost my house, couldn't pay my bills, didn't have money for food. My health is deteriorated. My teeth are all falling out, and I'm fighting for my life every day. And also there was a black teacher in Los Angeles teaching who was sprayed in his face. And because they never give us the proper doctors, he died from being sprayed in his face. And I am appalled that I am in America where we're killing off people, killing off injured workers, killing off people for other reasons, and it's just absolutely appalling. Now, all of a sudden, because they had the doctor under oath who admitted he didn't have the evidence to write the medical report, but he said I was very sick, which he said the whole time. They have now approved 9 doctors, which is now 17 years later. I've had 10 lawyers, and I'm looking for a civil attorney. If anybody knows when I need a civil attorney, my case is worth millions of dollars. And my life, what is a life worth? You can't replace a life. And so I am waiting now for the new doctors, and I'm waiting for treatment. They say that I need treatment for the rest of my life. Whatever I need to cure any of my physical injuries that I'm to get. I haven't seen a doctor yet for treatment to help me. And by the grace of God, it's only by God's grace that we're making it. And when we took God out of this country, that's the end of this country. And it's time to put the Lord back in. And there's, a lot of blood on a lot of people's hands, but this is absolutely disgusting, Reverend Pinckney.
No, believe me, I understand, because I tell you, what is the world coming to? We have allowed these rich folks and all these other people to take control of our lives, and they're in total control. Unless we stand up, we got to stop being individuals. It doesn't make a difference whether you're black, white, red, brown, yellow, blue, polka dot, or whatever color you think you want to be. We have to learn to stand together. And we can't wait until something happens to us and say we want to fight. We can't do that. And that's what we do. We wait until something happens to us, then we want to fight. It's too late. You need
it's
to fight for
late.
People.
It's already too late. We had 58 people that were shot. I mean, I don't think it was that man that just killed them. We have in California, our state legislatures, every time we turn around, they have another tax. Or people, everybody's going to be on the street. You can't afford your house. They tell you what you should eat, what you should do, changing about the water. They're not even saving the water. They're ruining our children's education, whether they're black, white, brown, whatever color they are. They just ruined their education, and they've got them on the road to prison.
Absolutely, the pipeline itself. But we, you know, once again, it's because we have relaxed. We have allowed these people to control everything in our household, our lives, and everything else. We have to stand up to. And, you know, I don't believe it. It's going to ever be justice here in America. And that's a sad thing to say, but I just don't believe it. I don't believe these people will give up their power. I just don't
money. It's
they're
money in their power. They give away bombs to countries. And what do they they think that the bomb's not going to, in Iran, that the bomb isn't going to fall on their head? They have shown it. It's just
the
money power.
Absolutely. Listen, we don't have any more time, so I got to let you go. And I want everybody to stay tuned next week. Same time, same station. You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney, and I want to thank my guest today. I think it was just beautiful.